Morning, counsel.
Morning, Your Honors. Russ Hart for the appellant, Benito Craig Castro. I'd like to ask to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
All right. I'll try to help you out, but as in the prior case, please keep track of your own time as well.
Thank you. Montana's law against partner family member assault, Montana Code Annotated 45-5206, is a misdemeanor battery statute that is elevated to a felony by the accumulation of convictions, much like the statute in United States versus Johnson. It's the type of law that the United States Supreme Court found in that case was not a crime of violence within the meaning of the guidelines. The level of physical force required to commit that offense is the same whether it's being prosecuted as a misdemeanor or as a felony.
Well, that may well be true, but why isn't the level of force required to commit the misdemeanor enough to constitute violence?
Thank you, Your Honor. We pointed to a couple of cases in our briefing. First is Montana versus Shearer. In that case, that is the one where a doctor had, or a gentleman posing as a doctor, had placed some phone calls from Florida.
Yeah, and let me. Shearer seems to me it's a strange case, but it does involve violence. It involves a doctor encouraging patients, so-called patients, to commit violence on themselves, to engage in self-mutilation. So what I've been trying to do is find a Montana case that applies this statute where there was no violence or a threat of violence. Do you have any?
Your Honor, we submitted a supplemental
authority.
Yeah,
but that's in the Superior Court. I mean, right? The case that you cited, a charge that was brought in Yellowstone, it's not Superior Court in Montana, it's District Court.
Correct, Your Honor.
Is there any appellate case in Montana that applies this statute when there isn't violent conduct somehow involved in the case?
Well, Your Honor, I'll go back to Shearer in a moment, but the standard is there a reasonable probability that it would be applied this way? And we have a pending case. We have a judicial interpretation of that statute.
By a trial judge.
Yes, Your Honor.
I know you've got one, and I don't know what weight to give it, but I asked you, are there any appellate cases that apply this statute in the absence of violent conduct?
There are not, Your Honor. And Montana it's a rural state. We have one appellate court. We don't have a lot of case law on the PFMA statute. We have case law on other statutes that rely on the same definition of bodily injury.
Should we certify this question to the Montana Supreme Court?
Well, Your Honor, I feel like
your chances there are better than here.
I don't know, Your Honor. the Montana Supreme Court in Shearer did make a finding that statute did not require any use of physical force. I believe what they said, the information did not rely on or allege that Shearer threatened or used.
The Montana Supreme Court.
The Montana Supreme Court, yes.
What about the Cooney case, counsel, where it said that it was somebody who was going to stalk, attempt to contact the victim upon release, and the Montana court said her likely reaction to it established that if released, Cooney presents a substantial risk of causing serious mental impairment to another person.
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there a threatened use of force in that case?
There was not threatened use of force. There was a fear that he would create that his release, I believe, would put that victim
in. So I guess, to rephrase Judge Wynn's question, is that an element of the Montana offense when one deals with mental injury? In other words, I'm trying to find a Montana case where the mental injury has been caused, but there was no fear or showing of force.
No, Your Honor, I think the closest thing I have is the 13th Judicial District. And again, if we're talking about a reasonable probability, we have a defendant in Montana right now who's facing prosecution under that theory.
Right. I'm not sure what the state high court would do with that, and that's why I go back to Cooney, which seems to suggest that the victim's emotional trauma as a result of the stalking could pose a substantial risk of bodily injury or death to others. So that seems to give some indication as to what the Montana court might do. In other words, I don't have a strong degree of confidence as to how the state court would interpret this, but you've got Castleman to deal with. So can you address that case?
Absolutely. Castleman, as with DeFrance, as with all of the all of the 922G9 cases, they deal with the lower level of force. DeFrance actually spoke about Shearer, said that this may not qualify as force under the guidelines, but for our purposes when we're addressing misdemeanor force, this satisfies it.
How do you deal with Justice Scalia's concurrence? I understand it's not the opinion of the court, but we seem to be learning that his concurrences end up being opinions of the court. He said he would have found the statute to require force capable of causing pain or injury to another person. And it's the same statute, virtually, as we have here. If we interpreted this statute as he did that one in Castleman, wouldn't that qualify?
I think it would.
So that's the question that was left open in Castleman.
Yes, yes. And Your Honor, I guess I would submit to you every court that has relied on Castleman has relied on that to justify the use of a lower level of force when dealing with misdemeanors. What we have in this case is, and Castleman talked a lot about domestic violence in particular. Johnson talked a lot about common law battery. We have a common law battery statute specific to domestic violence. If we look at the common law as it relates to domestic violence.
Can I ask
you
a question that
yes.
I'm not sure I can get an answer from the briefs. I understand that Judge Morris at some point had taken a different view than Judge Waters. Is that still the way Judge Morris is applying the statute?
I don't know of another time that
I'm trying to figure out whether there is in effect a disagreement among the Montana district judges or whether, as the government says, Judge Morris has changed his mind.
Well, Judge Morris analyzed the immigration statutes, as I understand it, a little bit differently than he analyzed them in Ross. That statute, however, it dealt with force against persons or property. And it specified that it does not rely solely in the statute, I believe, it does not rely solely on psychological or emotional injury. That's explicit in the statute. And we don't have that in the Montana's PFMA statute in the definition of bodily injury. In fact, it's clear that a prosecution can rely entirely on an emotional or a psychological injury.
One last question, because I know you want to save time.
Absolutely.
Let's assume that the statute didn't have the emotional or psychological injury in it. I'm not sure I understand your position. Is it your position that it would qualify or that it wouldn't because it can be satisfied by nonviolent touchings?
Your Honor, I think it still would not be satisfied. As you say, it could still be satisfied by nonviolent touching. We have that in this 13th Judicial District case where you have harmful or offensive touching and nothing else. We have the Shearer case where the court says you don't need to apply any physical force. And
this statute says bodily injury.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, there's another statute in Montana that defines serious bodily injury, and I think that's more the level of Johnson force that we see in that statute. That is for statutes such as assault causing serious bodily injury. There's a separate statute, and we have laws that fall under that definition that qualify as what Montana characterizes as a violent felony. The language of that statute is almost identical to what we see in the guidelines. An element of the crimes which as an element require the use of physical force. And that's akin to violent force. That's akin to the type of force we see in Johnson, violent felony force.
I know you're running out of time, but
yes.
I'll give you a minute on rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Tim Tark of the District of Montana on behalf of the United States. The issue before the court in this case is whether purposely or knowingly causing bodily injury under Montana law is a crime of violence sufficient to meet the standard for the guidelines. And while nothing with respect to the categorical approach is entirely straightforward, this case is simplified considerably by the fact that the Ninth Circuit has repeatedly held that causing bodily injury in the context of an assault statute does require physical force.
Sure, but have we dealt before with an assault statute that made causing mental distress a crime?
The Ninth Circuit hasn't. The Supreme Court has, of course, in Castleman.
Yeah, but in Castleman, it didn't hold it was a crime of violence. It held it met a lower threshold.
Correct. But there's a couple points about Castleman, but the first one I'll make is that Castleman makes clear that Montana law is not on its face overbroad, because it does require common law physical force. So the only way that Mr. Castro can be successful here is by showing an actual case.
That's my question. Does the Montana law require the common law definition of force?
There is no case in Montana, in Montana law, that where bodily, purposely or knowingly causing bodily injury.
I think your friend has admitted that, and we can't find any either. My question was, does the Montana statute require an application of force at all?
There's no case in Montana law where that was a found to be bodily injury without physical force.
Well, let me just give you a hypothetical. I know the Supreme Court tells us not to be fanciful, but I wrote my wife a degrading note every day telling her she was ugly and I hated her, and she suffered mental injury as a result. Would that be covered by this statute?
Again, there's no case on point, but I believe the answer is no for two reasons. First, in the Haber case, the case cited in appellant's opening brief, it's H A something E R. I'm forgetting the term, but the court there said that embarrassment, anger, and
it didn't amount
shock
to didn't was, amount to mental. Right, but let's assume.
Well,
that she suffers serious mental injury from that.
It actually said those things are not a species of bodily injury. So I think it's a little bit more than dealing with the level.
You agree there's mental distress or what's the last word in the statute?
It's mental impairment.
Yeah. So mental impairment
that
can. So I'm asking whether mental impairment can be caused. Theoretically, it seems to me it can, by something other than the application of force.
I think there's a good reason not to think that Montana would interpret that way. Obviously, they have not, and that should be enough to end this question. But there's a good reason to think that they wouldn't. And that actually goes back to the other point that appellant raised in his opening brief. Forcible felony is defined under Montana law as a felony involving use or threat of physical force or violence. The Montana Supreme Court has made clear that, and this is in the Hayes case, Hicks case, made clear that assault on a minor, which involves the same level of same language as is at issue here, was categorically, under the way the Montana law applies categorically, was a forcible felony, was sufficient force to apply the forcible felony statute in the...
Counsel, let me ask you the same question that I asked your opposing counsel. Why doesn't Cooney 2 suggest to us that the Montana Supreme Court would apply the statute to nonviolent conduct that involved Mr. Cooney being released from the mental health facility? And I thought the question in that case was whether he posed a substantial risk of bodily injury to the victim. And so the court, in that analysis, was analyzing the emotional trauma and distress that the release may cause to the victim. Where's the violent conduct there? Where's the application of physical force in that scenario?
So I think it's important to look at the Cooney cases, which is sort of a strange series of cases, but to look at them as a whole. as the DeFrance case, Judge Christensen did in the DeFrance case. In Cooney 1, the 1995 Cooney case, which is not cited in our briefs, it is cited in the DeFrance decision, the victim testified that her fears were based on her fear of being physically, fear of physical injury.
Right, let me hone you in on Cooney 2, because in Cooney 2, the argument that Cooney makes is that the victim's probable adverse reaction to the mere fact of his release does not constitute serious mental illness or impairment, and that was rejected by the Montana Supreme Court.
I don't think there is any implication in the Cooney scenario that someone could knowingly or intentionally cause bodily injury without the use of force there. The concern there specifically was about being contacted. It is possible being contacted by Mr. Cooney if he got out. And I do think, I don't think you can draw the conclusion from Cooney that you could cause bodily injury without physical contact.
So you're saying implicit in that ruling is the assumption from the prior case that he may cause her physical injury. It's not just the mental distress. The way it's written, I'm not sure that I am convinced of that argument, but did I understand the argument correctly?
I agree with you, Your Honor. It is a little bit, the language there is sort of fuzzy, but in that Cooney 2 language, the talk is about the victim's concern for her and her family's safety.
It's a fear of violence.
I think it's possible that the court's sort of using the mental injury to maybe expand how certain, because here it was certain that he would engage in his stalking behavior, practically certain that he would engage in the stalking, and the concern was, the defense's argument was, well, even if he stalks her, we don't know for certain that it would lead to bodily injury. And so the court, I think, sort of used, well, we know that there has been mental injury as a result of this. We know there's a possibility that he's going to contact her again, and may have used that sort of as a buffer there. But I don't think you can draw any conclusions with that with respect to the intentional causing of bodily injury.
What's the government's view of certification?
I don't think the court can certify this question because the question is a question of federal law. I was involved in a case where this court tried to certify.
We would be asking the court whether this defendant's conviction under Montana statute had in it an element of violence.
But that isn't a question under Montana. Can
this statute be violated without the application or threat of bodily force?
And I think that would be a hypothetical that this court would pose. This court would be asking for an advisory position from the Montana Supreme Court on that issue. I do want to address briefly the Shin case because, even though that is a district court case, and I think that this court doesn't need to address that issue in order to show a reasonable, or that doesn't show a reasonable probability anyway. But it's important to note that in the Shin case, there definitely was physical force. You can't get to the question that the court was addressing there without non-consensual sexual contact. And what was alleged there, I think, again, we don't know the facts of that case because it's not done yet, but is physical force. It involved grabbing, groping, pressing the defendant's crotch against a victim, a non-consensual hug. I think those are sufficiently violent force with respect to sufficient to meet Stoeckling, to meet the standard of 4B1.2. If there's no further questions, thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors. When we look at Castleman and DeFrance in particular, where we're analyzing this lower level of force for misdemeanors.
Yeah, but see, they don't say lower. They don't say it's an inherent quality of misdemeanors that they involve a lower level of force. They just look at the elements of the offense. So the fact that we can have a misdemeanor that involves violence, can't we?
We can.
And we can have a state can make a violent crime a misdemeanor, can't it?
It can. And Montana has not classified this offense as a violent crime the way it interprets its laws. And I think one consideration that each of those, the Supreme Court and the District Court in Montana had, was that a ruling finding that, you know, that Montana's definition or any state's definition of bodily injury, that would have invalidated several convictions. And we don't have that in this case.
Montana apply the categorical approach, or are they smarter?
I don't know if I'd call them smarter. I think they're pretty smart. But,
in state law. Well, I think we're not smart to do so.
I will concede.
Does the state court apply the categorical approach when looking at aggravators and enhancers and things like that?
I will tell you, I've everything I've learned about the categorical approach, and I've practiced for about 10 years now in Montana, and everything I've learned about it has come in this case. I have not seen Montana employ that approach, and I didn't come across anything like that with in my research in this case. They did. Your Honor.
No, you've answered my question.
All right. Thank you, counsel. You're over time unless my colleagues have any additional questions.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you both for your arguments today. The matter is submitted.